These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
I think it's totally badass of Claro to have him come out. Like, an amazing moment, I thought.
Casey, it's great to see you.
Great to see you. Great to meet you.
Yeah, I know. Likewise. Welcome to the Golden Age.
Thank you so much.
So I want to begin with a scene from last week, Bernie Sanders at Coachella. What went through your mind when you saw that?
I've actually just spent the last couple of hours digging into Coachella, not knowing that this is going to be your first question, and just the politics of Coachella, the brands, the brand of it all. I mean, look, I thought it was brilliant. I see the sort of like skepticism or the, I mean, it got a little backlash among some corners of the internet, but I think it's totally badass of Claro to have him come out. Like, an amazing moment, I thought.
I totally agree. It was a moment. And I feel like if you want to reach Gen Z or really anyone these days, you have to have a moment on that level cuts through culture.
Totally. I think cool of her and cool of him. Like, an amazing, like, a moment of alignment, I think.
That's a great way to put it. AOC joins Bernie Sanders on many of these tours. It's called the Anti-Oligarchy Tour. A lot of the time, they target Elon Musk. One of my questions that I was curious about was, what does Gen Z make of Elon Musk? Has his brand been hurt as much as the media portrays it?
Oh, I mean, Andrew, I think you could probably answer this better yourself since you're a Gen Zer, but you are Gen Z, right?
I am, yeah.
Probably. Yeah, yeah. But in my research, I mean, I think it's complicated, right? And it's funny, I think, to talk to you about Gen Z men since you are, in fact, a Gen Z man.
But yeah, you should interview me.
Yeah. I would love to, actually. But
After this, we'll do it.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of can't stop following this whole the toxic masculinity, which isn't a new thing that is happening, but I can't stop reading about the Adolescence movie. I'm sure you've seen that.
Yeah.
Is like the top of Netflix. And, you know, we can't divorce that from what's happening with Elon Musk and what's happening across this manosphere. I think that Elon has hardcore fans who will always ride for him. And can you think of anybody else who is similar at position of power who has made a lot of mistakes but still has hardcore fans, especially in the sort of with men, you know?
Maybe it's just like his boss, Donald Trump.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, just when you think that things can't get worse, like, certainly they'll wake up now, right? Like, certainly they'll realize that they've been just sort of blindly following these leaders, and like, this will do it. You know, this will be the thing. Like, was it just yesterday, the DM, like, they're doing away with DMs on Twitter?
I didn't see that announcement.
Okay, my husband told me this. I did not fact check it, and I should have before bringing it up. But he said that Elon was accused of sending insensitive, sexually suggestive DMs to women. And so instead of reprimanding him or doing literally anything else, they might do away with DMs altogether.
Well, that's how he met Ashley St. Clair, his supposed baby mama. So I think he treats X as a dating app as much as a social platform.
But if they take away the DMs, what will he do?
He'll be single and have no more babies, I think.
I don't think he needs any more at this point.
Yes, he has an army. I agree.
Yeah.
Speaking of X, what is Gen Z's favorite social media platform? It seems like TikTok gets all of the attention. Is X popular amongst Gen Z?
I think among a certain subset of Gen Zers. It's actually really interesting, Andrew. I did a story about, at this point, it's probably been 4 years. I talked to a bunch of Gen Zers about their favorite social platforms. This was when TikTok was popular, but still sort of on the rise. And it was before Twitter had its Elon takeover. So a very different time in social media. And so many of the Gen Zers, women especially, said that they love Twitter, a great place to connect, a great place for networking. They, you know, I talked to a lot of like very professionally minded young women, and they really felt like Twitter was where it's at. And none of those women, I would bet, spend any time on Twitter now, because it is just shrouded in this sort of like toxic masculinity,
It's a cesspool. I mean,
Yeah.
There's a lot of explicit imagery on there. It's
like,
very different
platform. Why spend any time on there? And I do think TikTok is the, at the moment, the dominant platform, because your FYP is often so tailored to what your interests are. It's feeding you in a way that going on Twitter isn't. And as a millennial woman, who I've been on Twitter since college, and it's like a daily habit ingrained in me to go to Twitter, and I still can't shake it. I'm still going to Twitter, you know, like waiting in the coffee line, and in many ways, I've tried to replace the Twitter scroll with a TikTok scroll, because it is so much more like fulfilling.
Totally.
But it's sad, because like Twitter as a concept, as the format, it's brilliant. But I was actually having a conversation with friends last night around Blue Sky, Threads, Substack Notes, but none of these are filling the sort of void.
And I even feel old talking about Twitter, because it's not even Twitter anymore. It's X, right?
Right,
and we
right.
Get it wrong.
I refuse. But, I refuse.
Same. But, you know, on Twitter, it might be empty calories. On TikTok, you could probably say the same thing. Or do you think TikTok is a valuable news platform to get information?
I'm a TikTok apologist. It's tricky. Like, I don't get any of my news there, and I don't think it is a valuable platform for news. I don't think that anyone should get their real news there. I think that so many young people especially feel like, you know, the format of the person talking into the camera, telling you things, is going to be true and real and balanced. And of course it's not. So that is the one sort of thing that scares me about TikTok. But in terms of like, I'm someone who like researches youth trends and shifts and things like that. And for that reason, TikTok is invaluable for me. And you know, is that news? I mean, it could be, you know, viral news, things like that, the way that people talk. Like, is it news that everyone's now saying this new phrase or things like that? So like for cultural, societal news, I find it to be fascinating, more akin to like Reddit. Like, should I go to Reddit for my hard news? No. But can you pick up some really interesting like consumer insights that could fall under news? Sure.
But unlike Reddit, there are real kind of news anchors and news personalities. I put anchors in quotes on TikTok. A lot of Gen Z seems to trust them in the same way that maybe their parents trusted the nightly news anchors.
Yeah. I mean, that is terrifying. I went to journalism school. Like, I care very deeply about the future of journalism. And, I think all the time, I graduated in 2010 at University of Missouri. And I think all the time, I had a great education there. I learned so much. But I think, like, what the hell are the professors teaching the kids right now? Because the kids are so... The kids, that makes me sound so old, but you know what I mean? They're so, so deeply digitally native in a way that the boomer age professors simply are not. And it's really scary, especially when they're teaching these students who don't really have a viable career path. And in fact, maybe their best bet is to start recording themselves talking on TikTok. So it's like this tension, right? Where it's like, if you can make a go at being a creator, a news creator, but you're still not Dan Rather, who has a team of producers making sure that what he's saying is factually correct, balanced, nuanced, you know, all of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Rachel Janfaza, who we both know, and
Love her,
Under the
Desk,
yeah, she's great. And Under the Desk News had a conversation where they talked about the underlying news on TikTok seems to be based on reporting from sources like the AP and trusted sources, and then it's kind of opinion layered on top of that. So it does seem like people do trust, they might not know that it's from the AP, but there does seem to be some source of truth that both sides or all sides could agree on.
I think that's true, but it's hard to tell what is being, you know, what facts are coming from the AP and what's coming from Breitbart. You know, oftentimes like the green screen format, you are seeing the publication or you are getting a sense of like where this is coming from, but not always, you know, depending on different formats and things, it's hard to always tell like where is this information coming from. And if you trust the person talking to you, you're going to just assume that it's all true. But it's also like, can you expect a creator they don't have a fact-checking team. They don't have like someone to make sure that what they're doing. So I don't think oftentimes it's not malicious. It's like they're doing the best that they can. But also like fake news is so rampant across the internet that it's like sometimes I see things and I think that they're true. And you kind of like scroll to the bottom and you're like, oh, this isn't a real site. So that's, I think, what makes it tricky.
Totally. And one of the things that people have noticed is that TikTok has had a rightward shift in its content. Is that something that you've picked up on? And if so, when did you pick up on that?
It's actually weird. I do not see any of that on my FYP whatsoever. And I mean, I think that is both a good and bad thing, right? Like it's good because I frankly don't want to see that. I also don't get a lot of politics on my TikTok feed because, again, that's not where I want my political news to come from. But I'm also very engaged with my algorithm. So I want it to kind of feed my work. And so if I'm getting stuff that doesn't feel relevant to what I am interested in professionally, then I'm very quick to say not relevant to me, which the TikTok algorithm, I don't know how much time you've spent on TikTok.
No, I don't use that feature,
oh
but
my
I
gosh.
Should.
Yeah. You totally should. It like, you know, like as an example, I love dogs. I have two dogs, but I don't need to see like cute dogs on my TikTok. You know, like that's not what I want my social media feed to be for. And so if I get like cute dog or if I get anything that feels just sort of like not aligned with what I want to use it, this platform for, then I say not relevant to me. And it really responds. And so like, for instance, coming out of the election, after we sort of like, I got in this feedback loop of like doom and gloom around, you know, people upset about how everything sort of turned out for obvious reasons, but I didn't want to be in this loop of doom on TikTok. So even though I wanted to see some of it, once I was like, okay, I've had enough, I just started hitting it with not relevant to me, not relevant. And very quickly, it's like, okay, I'm back to like normal TikTok. Again, it's good and bad.
That's the rightward shift that you made yourself on your feed.
Yeah.
So I, as you noted earlier, was in college not too long ago. And I felt like when I was in college, Gen Z was kind of marked by this reputation of activism and social justice. Today, I feel like Gen Z has a little bit of a different reputation. What's happening?
I think it's sort of twofold, my perspective on it. Well, I think Rachel actually spoke very eloquently about how there's this kind of two Gen Zs, and that's very much like real and happening. But I also think it's sort of there was a media narrative that Gen Z, you know, the Parkland kid, like there was sort of one point of view of what a Gen Zer looked like. And I think that especially like in the sort of post-2016, you know, gun, like the teen activists were the ones that were getting all of the headlines. Teen Vogue, like they were getting so much coverage. And I do think that they were an incredibly impactful contingent. But that was, I'm from rural Missouri, and it is, as you would imagine, very red now. It hasn't always been. But those kids are not activists, you know, like those kids are not, they don't give a shit about gun control. They want their guns. And that's by no means a unique mindset in America now. But I also think it wasn't necessarily a rare mindset then. We just were only seeing this one sort of headline. And I think part of that is like, I don't know, reporting on youths and like youth trends, I think has always been a little bit tricky just because a lot of reporters don't have, unless they're young ones, they kind of fall out of touch. I think platforms like TikTok and Reddit make it a lot easier to peer inside different age groups, different worlds that aren't yours. Did I answer your question?
No, definitely. And in 2024, we did see a shift right in the general election amongst Gen Z. Was it the podcasting that Trump did? Was it his messaging? Was it the Democrats' lack of messaging? What was it? I mean, I know that you pointed out that Gen Z is more diverse politically than we probably thought before 2024. But what was it that resonated with Gen Z that was in Trump's message?
I think all of the things that you said, but the thing that comes to mind most, and I think part of this is because it has been covered a lot recently, but I go back often, think about my hometown and how that has sort of been shaped politically in the last 10 years. And it's a lot of blue collar workers. They've felt very like, they felt totally unseen by what's happening with the Democrats, and they, you know, the woke liberals, in quotes, you know, they just feel like that's a different world. They cannot relate to that whatsoever. And at the same time, like economically, they're feeling strapped. And so I think it was just a lot of, and at the same time, this idea of, you know, women are getting ahead, the men in sort of spite of the men, or the men are being sort of held back because the women are getting ahead. And I think that that's created a pretty complicated tension between men and women. I'm sure this is something that you see playing out with like single Gen Zers. And I think these headlines and all of this research, like, it's not overstating this like tension that's happening.
100%. Are there things that politicians should take away from the 2024 election in terms of how to reach Gen Z voters?
Well, I think what we're seeing now, you know, I think it was a huge wake-up call. And I think that, I think at the end of the day, the Democrats were thinking about Gen Z as being this sort of monolithic, like everyone feels this way. And if we can really double down on woke again in quotes, but like then Gen Z will be an easy win. I think that there's more understanding that generations are incredibly nuanced, Gen Z especially, and they care about all sorts of issues, but leaning too far one side versus another. I just think that politicians understand that it's more nuanced than that. And I also think that that Democrats didn't understand how much it comes down to Gen Z feeling financially strapped, and how much it comes down to them feeling like no matter how hard they work or how much they do, they're not going to be able to achieve these milestones. And I think that because Democrats were like leaning so far into like, you know, trans rights are very important, of course, but I think that Gen Z felt like maybe their imminent needs were being overlooked.
And when you, I'm fascinated by your Substack, your business. When you talk with brands, are they interested in Gen Z politically and their buying patterns? And what do you talk to brands about?
Yeah, I think that they're interested in how politics are shaping. And this is me too. I'm more interested in how politics are shaping consumer habits, macro trends. Like something that I've been really interested in is, you know, this was sort of a COVID era trend, but it has only continued where young people are like moving to small towns. This is something that I'm deeply interested in, being from a small town. I've lived in Brooklyn for 15 years, but I feel very much like a rural Missouri girl at heart. And I'm fascinated by these sort of the way that people are making community in places that they maybe wouldn't have previously thought, you know, was appealing. So I think the brands that I'm talking to especially are more interested in not the like political nuances of like what's going to happen in 4 years or what's going to happen within the midterms, but more about like how will the midterms, how will things shift and how will that shape consumer buying habit, and not just consumer, like not just purchase power, but also like literally TikTok, you know, like how are viral trends going to change as a result? How will, like, with this gender sort of tension that's happening, how will that then shape like the future of marriage? And then, you know, will we have fewer kids? What will Gen Alpha look like as a result of that? There's just like so much to it.
And I'm sure you talk a lot about how Gen Z consumes media. I'm curious, your Substack is read by, I think, over 70,000 people. There's a lot of energy around Substack.
Yeah.
You know, what are your thoughts on Substack as a platform? And do you think it has staying power?
You know, I think about Substack more. So I, coming out of college in the 2010s, there was so much momentum around blogs, personal blogs. Like, did you read blogs when you were a kid?
I think I might have had a Tumblr, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So when I was in high school, I always wanted to be a writer. Like, I'm such a cliche. I wanted to be a writer living in New York in, you know, my small community. And so I started a blog. I had a teacher that was like, if you write every day, you'll become, you know, it'll improve your writing skills. And so I like dutifully like did my little blogs every day. And I, at the point, it was on Blogger. Slash Blogspot. And there was a lot of interest in blogs at that time. And so like having had that blog in high school, I was able to get an internship at Teen Vogue in 2008, just because I like could point to this blog and they needed a digital intern. It was like the first time that Condé Nast, like the first summer that they realized they needed to like beef up their digital. Too little, too late. But so, you know, it was just like such a different time. But the person, there was a real wave of personal blogs. And then, of course, like Gawker, all these individual voices. I think that there are a lot of parallels with Substack as that sort of 2010s heyday of blogging. I think about Substack less as like Substack as a social network and more as like a really great platform, because I mean, I'm sure you know this, Andrew, but what makes me so excited about Substack and Beehive and platforms like this is they combine the blog with the email. So it's like a lot of email businesses that came up, you know, 10 years ago, it was an email that sat in your inbox and didn't have, there was no SEO. You couldn't get there anywhere beyond your inbox. But then the fact that they're able to like, it lives on its website, but it's also in your inbox is like, shouldn't be radical, but it really does change things in terms of like a platform.
This just occurred to me. Is Gen Z using email at the same rate that generations before used email?
So this is something that I've always been fascinated by and very interested in, because in 2016, actually, I left Teen Vogue and started sort of like the Skim for Teens with a friend. And at that time, we tried to raise funding because it was like flush times for media. And what we heard from everyone is like teens don't read email. But I'd worked at Teen Vogue and had helped with the email strategy. And my friend had worked at Nylon Magazine. And we were like, no, you guys have it wrong. Like teens have been underserved on email, but they actually do have to check their email. And so I've always been very bullish on email. I think what's interesting around like a Substack is that they give you the option to also just, if you don't want it in your inbox, you can get it on the app. I also really love an RSS feed reader, which I don't know. Do you know what that is?
I mean, I know RSS and podcasting, but
and podcasts. See, that's the thing. It's like most people at because of the podcast boom, most people only know RSS from the podcasting perspective. But back in the day, every single website had an RSS feed and you would get every headline. So everything the New York Times posted, you would just get that feed. And I wanted to make a comeback.
I think maybe that's a little bit like Reddit, a little bit like Twitter, but not personalized.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And also Dig is coming back, which I don't know if you're familiar with Dig, but it was the homepage of the internet. And I think that there's going to be some interesting sort of like nostalgic web experiences happening beyond Dig.
And Snap is used way more than people realize amongst Gen Z and even younger, right?
Yeah, I did a story. I think it's been about a year now for The Cut, and they reached out because they were interested in understanding how SNAP plays a role in like teen friendship breakups, which is quite
Tell me more.
specific. And so I talked to a bunch of tweens about their SNAP usage, and yes, it does play a role in friendship dynamics, of course. But like the crazier thing to me is like, it, and I don't think that this is like by no means unknown, especially by parents who have kids with Snap, but like Snap is the default chat app for
Yes.
kids. And so I do, it does make me wonder like the media companies who are still investing in Snap, it's like you're not getting the eyeballs. The eyeballs are all going to the chat app, the chat function. No one gives a shit about like content, your content. You know, they just want their friends' streaks. But yeah, I mean, the fact that Snap has, whether the content play will work for them or not, the fact that they have such high user engagement, they have like embedded themselves in the like teen social ecosystem in a way that I think most people sort of don't understand, and because they kind of forget about Snap.
Yeah, I mean, even their stock trades at way below what the other technology companies trade at. And if you're looking
Yeah.
at it like that, it's kind of a bargain in terms of where young users' attention is at and what it's priced at.
I do wonder though if that's because the ad business is not as strong, because on an app like TikTok, you're kind of used to seeing sponsored or like ads or like any sort of branded content. But if you're on Snap literally just to group chat with your friends, you really don't want ads. Like that's an unwelcome experience there. And so I wonder if it's trading lower because of that.
I think that you should be a Wall Street analyst in addition to being a Gen Z analyst. I want to end with this. Talk to me about your favorite Gen Z trends. We're talking
Oh my
pimple
gosh.
patches, wearing pajamas all the time,
Oh my
Birkenstocks.
gosh. I mean, I have to tell you, so I've been doing this newsletter for 4 years this week, literally.
Congrats.
And I just it thank you. I just find it to be like so relentlessly interesting. What like every day I'm like, what crazy thing am I going to learn about today? Like every week I look back and I'm like, so much has happened. And I just think it's all just so, even the like very stupid viral trends, you can all get something about like human behavior from it. Like I'm working on the weekend newsletter, which is really long and detailed. And today we're this weekend, just looking at some of the things that happened this week, which is like, you spend a lot of time on TikTok, right?
Yes, yeah.
Did you see, sorry, I'm just gonna pull it up really quickly. Did you see that Gen Alpha is now like calling each other good boy as a like diss?
I am not as deep as you, clearly. I did not see
So,
that. So
but like,
explain.
just yeah, I need to like reach out to my teacher friends. So they're basically demeaning even their teachers. They're like, pick up that pick pencil, and then what, and the teacher or the classmate does, and then they'll be like, good boy. But it's like going viral on like across to, and it's like these are young people.
How old is Gen Alpha, just so I understand?
Gen Alpha is like a generally 14 and younger.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there's another trend. Like the way that people are like pushing language, I think is fascinating. And this is again just in the last week, Gen Zers are coming up with totally random words and pranking their friends to think that that word is like racially insensitive or otherwise some sort of slur or something that is basically tricking them into thinking that they've said a bad word and that they will be canceled. And so it's like obviously a little disturbing, but when you
Yeah.
kind of like think about the layers of that, especially in terms of like, you know, this sort of anti-woke like era that we're living in, it's kind of wild that like people are tricking their friends into thinking they're canceled and then being like, haha, just kidding, like that's actually not a bad word.
It's subversing cancel culture, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah. And so yeah, I mean, and these are just like two things that, but it's just the way that language shifts and the way that TikTok amplifies all of this. It's just like so fascinating. I love it. These two specific examples are a little dark, but I love it generally, just like the way that culture is shifting so quickly.
Same. And I think that's why your newsletter has cut through and why it's so popular. Tell the audience, where can they sign up?
Afterschool.substack.com. And I also, on social media, I'm fairly active on TikTok, Casey Morrow Lewis.
Great. Well, Casey Lewis, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm such a fan of you, of your podcast, of your byline. This is so fun.
Thank you so much.